Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from fermentation to Fermilab. Summer is right around the corner, so in this week's show we're kicking back with a brewski. We'll learn about ancient brewing practices and explain why a crop shortage may affect the cost of your next drink. That's all coming up on today's episode of Distillations. All beers, no matter where they're from, are essentially made the same way. A sugary liquid produced from a steeped grain is fermented by yeast that produces both alcohol and carbonation. Although fermentation is a decidedly biological process, chemistry plays a huge part in determining how that fermentation takes place and how the final product tastes. We'll start today's show by looking at how calcium, something we more typically associate with milk, affects the brewing process. CHF's Jennifer Dionisio has more in today's Element of the Week.
Calcium, a soft, silvery, reactive metal, is the fifth most abundant element on the Earth's surface. It plays a key role in human physiology, and the typical human carries over 2.5 pounds of calcium, mostly in the bones. Calcium is also important in regulating enzymes and stabilizing acid levels, or pH, in the blood. Oddly enough, it does the same thing for beer. In the brewing process, calcium increases enzymatic activity and helps break down proteins. Similarly, calcium ions help regulate pH at various stages in the brewing process by keeping acid levels high enough for fermentation. It does this as part of a buffer system with bicarbonate ions, which are both found in the water used in the brewing process and produced during fermentation. Bicarbonate is more efficient at raising the pH than calcium is at lowering it, but a hoppy beer requires a low pH and therefore a high calcium to bicarbonate ratio. Just as calcium makes hard bones, calcium ions affect the hardness of the water used for brewing. For example, brewers use harder waters with more calcium ions for pale ales and softer waters for lagers. Since the entire water profile, including any number of trace elements and minerals, affects water hardness and pH, no two brewers will produce exactly the same beer. So when people say they can taste the difference between Guinness brewed in Dublin versus Guinness brewed in London, they just might be onto something. And that's it for the Element of the Week. I'm Jennifer Dionisio.
Jennifer Dionisio is Program Coordinator for Biotechnology at the Chemical Heritage Foundation's Center for Contemporary History and Policy. Although the variations are endless, beer falls into two main categories, lagers and ales. The two varieties use different kinds of yeast that flourish under different conditions. Lager yeast ferments best around 46 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit, while ale yeast thrives at 60 to 72 degrees. After yeast, one of the most important determinants of a beer's flavor is the kind and proportion of grains used, barley, wheat, corn, or rice. But this year's brewers are facing a shortage of another key ingredient, hops. Audra Wolf explains in today's Chemistry in Your Cupboard.
As one of the many ingredients added to beer to impart flavor, hops have been described as the spice or condiment for modern brewing practices. It's believed that the climbing perennial vines, which can reach 18 feet tall, were first cultivated in Bavaria in the 8th century. The plants produce cones, not unlike immature pine cones, that must be dried before brewing. The hops contain alpha acids that help to stabilize the beer and impart bitterness and aroma. During boiling, the alpha acids go through an isomerization process that makes them more soluble in water, and that's what you taste when you drink a very bitter, hoppy beer. In fact, the foam that sets at the top of a glass of beer is partially caused by links between the alpha acids and proteins, which explains why the foam usually tastes more bitter than the rest of the beer. While you can generally credit hops for a beer's bitterness, just how bitter the beer is depends on many factors, including the age of the hops used, the length and intensity of the boil, and when the hops were added. Late additions impart flavor and aroma, not bitterness. Brewers actually have a standard measurement, the IBU, or International Bitterness Unit, to measure bitterness, but it's not considered a true measure because of variations in hops and hopping techniques. Budweiser, for example, has an IBU of 12, whereas an India Pale Ale might have an IBU of 60 or even 100. But due to a recent shortage of the flavorful plant, beer drinkers may have to find a new favorite ale, or else pay the price. A combination of fewer acres planted and bad weather led to a shortage of hops last year, a shortage that has particularly affected microbrewers who rely on hops to produce their distinctive, flavorful beers. If you haven't already seen an increase in the price of your favorite microbrew, you probably will soon. And you might expect subtle changes in taste as microbrewers get creative with their limited hop supplies. For Distillations, I'm Audra Wolf.
Have comments or questions about something you heard on our show? Send your thoughts to distillations@chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Brewing is one of the oldest technologies known to civilization. We have evidence of beer linking back to ancient Egypt and even Mesopotamia. To learn more about beer's long history, producer Joel Rose visited the Dogfish Head Brewery in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, where brewmasters have perfected the recipe for the oldest known fermented beverage in the world.
Dogfish Head's newest brew is called Theobroma, Greek for fruit of the gods. It's not quite ready for public consumption, but brewer Brian Selders agreed to pour us a sneak preview.
Good and murky. Kind of looks like a brownish red, I would say.
Kind of an apple cider color.
Apple cider color. That's a great way to describe it, sure.
The color is the first tip-off that this is not your typical lager. Selders takes a deep sniff before bringing the glass to his lips.
It's very subtle. Cocoa aroma. You also smell honey. There's a little green apple in there, I think.
Well, has a lot going on.
It certainly does.
The recipe for Theobroma is based on a chemical analysis of 3,000-year-old pottery fragments discovered at an archaeological dig in Honduras, the earliest known example of an alcoholic beverage involving chocolate. The original was probably made from the pulpy fruit of the cacao plant, but that was impractical for the modern version, which uses cacao seeds and cocoa powder. What hasn't changed, says Selders, is the fermentation process.
What's going on inside the fermenter right now is the yeast is taking up the sugars and converting it into alcohol and carbon dioxide, as well as a pretty large package of esters and phenols, which are just naturally occurring in the fermentation process.
In this case, he's feeding the yeast something different than he would for your average beer.
Just because there are so many weird ingredients in there, but big picture-wise, it's pretty much the same exact thing.
This particular drink dates to around 1200 BC, which makes it pretty young as historical beverages go. The Dogfish Head Brewery has also helped recreate a fermented rice-based drink enjoyed in China around 7000 BC, and a brew that was served around the time of King Midas in ancient Sumeria.
This apparently was some kind of a fermented mixed beverage, a grog, that was served up at the final feast for Midas or his one of his ancestors.
Patrick McGovern is a molecular archaeologist. The remains of the Sumerian grog were discovered in bronze vessels at an archaeological site in present-day Turkey, though all McGovern had to do to study them was to climb a few flights of stairs at his office at the University of Pennsylvania. He ran the residue through a battery of modern tests to figure out what the main ingredients might have been.
There was honey in it, grape was part of the composition, and then we had calcium oxalate, which is also referred to as beer stone, which points to barley being part of one of the ingredients.
McGovern took his findings to the Dogfish Head Brewery in Delaware to see if they could recreate that ancient beverage.
This is the Midas Touch. This was the first in the series of historical beers that we make here.
Brian Selders says the Midas Touch Golden Elixir was a hit from the beginning, and it's easy to see why, since it actually tastes like modern beer. But Selders admits he's having a harder time figuring out how to adapt the ancient chocolate drink the modern palate.
The main goal of making this wasn't to make a beer that says, hey, I'm a chocolate beer, look at me. It's really, I'm this really weird thing based on this really weird research, and chocolate just happens to be one part of that.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I can't compare it to anything I've ever actually had.
Good. Excellent. You shouldn't be able to compare it to anything you've ever had.
Selders says the brewery hopes to perfect the recipe before Theobroma goes on sale in August. In Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, I'm Joel Rose for Distillations.
Joel Rose is a freelance producer based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You can find links to our favorite beer recipes on our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation is attributed to Philadelphia's own Ben Franklin. Beer is living proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer, with help this week from Lissa Rome. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.